I just wanted to read a little bit from the, just from the, something that may puzzle you. The lost I will seek out, the strayed I will bring back, this is the first reading. The injured I'm going to bind up, the sick I'm going to heal, but the sleek and the strong I'm going to destroy, shepherding them rightly. How about that? What does that mean? What Jesus is saying is that the lost, the strayed, the injured, the sick, these are the ones that were attracted to Christ in the Gospels, and they still are. If I don't have a weakness within me, Christ can't get in. It's called sin. That list of things that people missed, we've all got them, let's face it. There's a sin for everyone in that list. But Christ knows our weakness. Invite him in, he'll heal it. It's the sleek and the strong say, I don't need Christ, I don't need anybody, I don't want God. That's destruction, because that's not what life is about, to find out how strong I am, but rather how weak I am. And the weak among us, the weakest often get destroyed in this world, yet they are the bellwether for our society. They are the ones that God has blessed the most, because they're there for us to care for. So I think that's what that means. Now, when we look at this gospel, which is really about sins of omission and sins of commission, we often don't think about what we haven't done. We just notice what we have done that may have been wrong, or, you know, that which we didn't miss, the things we do for Christ. There was a story a number of years ago about a man who raised a hippo in Africa. It was, I don't know, about 8 or 9 years ago. This was an orphaned animal, very small, true story, who was the individual took this hippo in and raised it, and didn't raise it the right way. It became acclimated to human beings too much, and so it could not be returned to the wild. There's a way of doing that so that they don't bond with a human, and therefore they can be hopefully reintroduced. But anyway, he treated it like a pet, which is fine when you've got a little hippo, but as it got bigger, this was a dangerous wild animal, and people told him, be careful with this. He says, oh no, he knows me. I'm like a parent to him. He always comes when I call. Be careful with hippos. One day it turned on him and killed him. And the moral of that story to me, first of all, the guy didn't listen, right? He didn't listen to people that knew better than him. And then he lost his life. But a hippo is a sin. If we nurture it, make friends with it, we think it's always going to be there for us, it's going to turn and kill you in the end. We can't make peace with a hippo and live with God. He's going to go for those hippos in this life or the next. And the ones that Christ concentrates on in the last judgment are the things that we didn't do. And it's impossible to know all the things we haven't done. At the end of the gospel, we say, Lord, have mercy on us, you know. But it is the test in advance. Our first judgment, or when we see what we've done, is at the moment of death, when we have a review of our own life, which I'm told from those who come back with stories that it happens all at once in three dimensions, seeing how the person we've had an altercation with on some level or vice versa was affected, how we were affected, and how God saw it. And this is, we'll go through life, seeing how we were links in a chain with other people in an immediate sense, and we will know where we belong, heaven, hell, or purgatory. At the end of time, we will all be assembled when earth has finished its course and the last human being has ever lived. In this mysterious place where everybody has been already judged and knows exactly where they're going, we will be reassembled so that all of human history may be laid out before us, and how yours and mine and everyone else affected everyone else, the links in the chain going forward and backward in time. Who brought you to this point? How did you affect the people that came long after you? What small things made huge differences? You smiled at somebody at the store during these stressful weeks, and they had a great day, and maybe it saved them from something worse. Little things like that, the kid that getting a toy for that made their Christmas, little things and big things. Likewise, the unconfessed sins and the deep ramifications. And it's going to be hard to watch while everybody else watches on the big screen in the middle. And all the nations every group we've been in, the Americans will all be together. And that's why it's important to be working on, if we can't change what's happening in our country, that we'd like something to be different. Have I made a difference? God isn't going to judge me on what the United States did, but what did I do? And I think that's a critical issue. For me, it's pro-life is my biggest issue, but if you have something else that you're working on, be an advocate for that, because when that judgment comes, I want to have stood for something in my life besides myself. Those are the people that are condemned. And a really interesting story about my father. He was, how do I put this politely? He was kind of tight with money, you know. You'd get kind of a cheap old Christmas gift when he bought them, and when my stepmother bought them, they were really nice. So we every other year, you know. I won't go into that, but I could be funny. So I was already in the seminary, and 9/11 occurred. Like all of you old enough to remember this, we were all glued to our television sets that morning. Somebody called me, woke me up from L.A., and while this is going on, I get a call from my father in L.A., and he says, something incredible just happened. My father was an agnostic. An agnostic that had pictures of me in a clerics all over the house. Figure that one out. He said, something amazing happened to me. I said, what was it? He said, I wrote out a check to the firemen's for quite a bit of money and sent it off for those who lost their lives on 9/11. That in itself was a miracle, like the second coming of Christ. But that's not what he called to tell me. He said, what does this mean? I wrote the check out for a certain amount, which he didn't tell me. And then he said, as I looked up at the screen, I noted the check number in the check register, I don't know, 2050 or whatever it is. And at that moment, they flashed the number of dead on the screen, and it was exactly the same number. And he said, what does it mean? I said, does it have to hit you over the head with a sledgehammer? I said, obviously, God saw your completely unselfish act for which you would get no reward, and he received it and thanked you. And I just thought, how cool is this? He got through to my father after all those prayers. And you know, that's what Christ is looking for. He recognized that God had touched this agnostic's heart and moved him out of pity to do something completely altruistic without the slightest benefit. We have this another interesting story that somebody, I heard this last night, very briefly, and we all know we had a couple of prominent deaths this week, Charles Manson of unhappy memory, and also if anybody remembers him, and younger people won't, David Cassidy. There was an era where every guy wanted to have hair like that, but anyway, I had the hair but not the face or the money. Anyway, he died, and Shirley Jones, it was on the news, said his stepmother, who was also on that show that he was on, he said his last dying words were, my God, the time I've wasted. As he's looking into eternity, he said, my God, I've wasted my time. Wow. I think I'm back in Tillamook. I had to put up with this for 9 months in Tillamook. I've really suffered. Anyway. Huh? I can talk longer because you aren't going anywhere when you get out of here. No. The people on the left are going to be surprised. The people on the right are going to be surprised. They've heard this gospel. You've heard the test. We just have to go out and do it. And we can't notice everybody, but it's a great thing to do for Advent. How many people can I notice where Christ is hidden in disguise? It becomes fun. And this is all God asks. There's always something more. I have been using gift tags, but there's all kinds of ad hoc, immediate things. We'll be surprised because you've tithed money to us or to some other charity, and we're busy doing things in your name. You won't have a clue that you even did this because you gave something out of charity, and it in turn was working and building interest in your account, you know. Or we don't connect the dots between that holding a door open for somebody when they're coming out or letting somebody go in front of you at line at the grocery store and this gospel. But he'll say, I was in line behind you. I had one item and you let me come forward. And you'll say, when did I see you doing that? You know, as he goes through everybody's life, they're going to see every single instance where Christ was hidden. A little bit, it's going to be a little uncomfortable, I think. The ones on the other side, the goats, they couldn't be bothered to come to church. They couldn't be bothered to read the scriptures. Oh, those old things? There's nothing in there for me. I'm going to follow whatever the people in the world are doing. And the people in the world don't know where they're going if they're not reading the scriptures. Christ's going to catch them by surprise. They've wasted their time. To quote David Cassidy, I don't know what he was referring to, but God save us from a wasted life. They didn't recognize Christ because they weren't listening. They blew the test. They thought life was all about them, and they put that coin back. They didn't spend it. They spent it on themselves. They didn't make any money with it. Their lives were useless. They have no fruit. What can they do? They don't fit in heaven. They want to come in. Christ wants them to come in, but they don't fit, and they begin falling away. And some of them fall so far away they go to hell because they don't want anything to do with God. They're not good. And he wants us. You know, that's what purgatory is that place where we can't come in yet. We're saved, but we need to be cleansed, this biblical place that we've been thinking about all through November. I think this is a really good reading as we begin to prepare for Advent, which is for many among the most stressful or lonely weeks of the year. But all of us can still, in the midst of it all, find ways to find Christ in disguise. Might have been sitting at the table at Thanksgiving, somebody that bugs you that shows up every year, and we were kind to them, you know? We disagree with them on something, and we let them talk, and we didn't say anything, you know? Or ate grandma's lumpy mashed potatoes, if you were here on Thursday. I offer her up every Thanksgiving, because boy, those lumps were like asteroids. she'd say, how about those potatoes? We'd say, they're unforgettable, Grandma. She's a good work. God's going to be holding one of those lumpy bowls of mashed potatoes because she never caught on. Anyway, see how simple it is. And yet, some people still blow the test. We thank God for that he shows us in advance how to love him and gives us a lifetime to figure it out.